We all know that women are not funny. And no one proves it better than Kay Ballard, the accidental lawyer who is the accidental host of our show. Of course, every accident that Kay Ballard encounters is intentional. And now her intention is to accidentally disprove the show's premise. So sit back and enjoy a fun conversation that matters between Kay and today's fabulous featured guest. Welcome to Women Are Not Funny Radio.
Hello, this is Kay Ballard, and I'd like to welcome you to Women Are Not Funny Radio. Whether you're listening on Jackalope 105 FM, on your iPod, streaming from the web, however you choose to connect with us, we're so glad you did. Today's guest is a fascinating woman and further proof that I have fabulous friends. It's Phoebe Legere, a performing artist, a visual artist, and someone who truly knows the art scene. In fact, perhaps she invented it. Phoebe has had an extraordinary career, and it continues. It's long running because she started her career as a teenager when she signed with Epic Records.
It's rumored that the phrase blonde bombshell was created specifically to describe Phoebe Legere. She's here today. I'm a little nervous because even though she's had every kind of showbiz success, including a record deal with Epic Records, a Carnegie Hall debut, and she even opened on tour for David Bowie. But Phoebe Legere, I still think it's possible that you're here to use Women Are Not Funny as a stepping stone for something better in the future.
I don't think I'm using this as a stepping stone to anything except possibly a deeper friendship with you.
I'm nervous, Phoebe. You're so talented. And is it possible that you really kind of consider this an audition to take over my show?
I was hoping not to be the host every week, but maybe every third week of the month I could be the host, and in the other times I can be your band leader.
Well, good answer, but, you know, it's kind of my show, darling.
Okay, take a vacation.
All right, but Phoebe, you know, and I'm not paranoid. People think I am, but I'm not. I just have to look after my own interests. But the two of us have been looking forward to today for the opportunity to sort of relax and have what you have called a conversational jam. I love that expression, and I love that idea.
Yeah.
But here's what I want to know. Are you actually ever able to relax?
Okay. You know, I don't think my mother ever relaxed for one second, but I do work on it. I think it's a great talent. And, of course, there are situations where it's easier to relax. When I've traveled to third world countries and been able to just lie in a hammock and be served cooling drinks by children who were being paid small salaries, you know, it's easier to relax in a rainforest, let's say, or a jungle. It is harder to relax living in New York City as I do because everybody around me is so nuts. They're all adrenaline junkies, Kay. So I look forward to a time very soon when I really can just get out and do some serious work on relaxing. It's very important. Doing nothing is the most important thing you may ever do in your life.
I think since you've succeeded at everything that you've ever tried, I think that it's likely you'll succeed at that, too.
Thank you.
Now, words that are used to describe you all in one sentence are funny, smart, and sexy. And another reviewer said, talent, intelligence, sex appeal. Darling, apparently you've cracked the code because those words are rarely used to describe one person.
Oh, right. Well, it causes a kind of cognitive dissonance. In our culture, people seem to want to feel superior to women who are very glamorous. And I learned this, it was illustrated very vividly the other night when I was watching I didn't want to watch the Oscars because I was in the middle of writing some music, and I just didn't want to be pulled around visually by all the dresses and all the hairstyles. I didn't want to go there. But, of course, it's my business, the entertainment industry. I wanted to keep up with it. So I was watching the Twitter feed and the Facebook feed about what people were blogging as they were watching the Oscars, right? I'm following them in text form. And I could not believe the bitchiness, the cruelty of these people's snipe. They were just sniping at the grooming of, like, some of the most beautiful women in the world, right? And the one that they went after with the most venom and jealousy and kind of rage was Gwyneth Paltrow, who decided to grow herself a little bit and become a singer. Now, I think everybody should sing. I applaud everybody's musical activities.
Phoebe states that everyone should sing. Oh, no. Phoebe, you're just plain wrong. I mean, everyone should not sing. There are people who should sing. They're the ones with the nice voices who can carry a tune. And then the rest of the people, no, they shouldn't sing. Let's take me, for example. I sing, but when I do, even if people don't beg me to stop singing, they certainly do not encourage me to continue singing. And I've noticed this, you know, and I accept their judgment. Could I become better at singing? I suppose, but there's really no need because, you know, there are these people who are actually good singers, you know, like Phoebe.
I was absolutely stunned by how mean this stuff was. So I think that people don't want women to have too much fun. They don't want them to, you know, but I'm not actually beautiful. I'm not actually sexy. I just get a hold of a good box of peroxide and a padded bra and there I go, you know.
Phoebe says she's not actually pretty. Oh my goodness, she's either being coy or the woman simply does not own a mirror.
Well, the funny part came out there because you actually are very glamorous, and that is very much a part of your onstage persona and how people know you. But once again, to be known as all three, funny, smart, and sexy, is rare because in our culture, you can be funny, but if you are, you're generally not considered smart and sexy.
Right.
Or you can be smart, but you can't be smart if you're funny and sexy.
Right.
And you can be sexy, but if you are, you're not funny and smart. And you, once again, you've cracked the code.
Okay, come on. You know, but when I'm really good, you know, when I'm really on, it's not the glamorous, iconic Phoebe Legere. It's not that blonde bombshell who's being funny. It's the skinny little kid with the big nose in the knee socks waiting at the bus stop being bullied by other kids. You know, that's the person who's funny.
Really? Your humor is inspired by your memory of your childhood?
I know, but, you know, that child is in me. That child is in me fighting all the time, you know?
Well, I haven't had the opportunity to see you on stage, but I know you're funny on stage, and I know that what you do is a combination of physical humor. I mean, you'll hop on a piano, apparently,
right,
and funny remarks.
Mark Brothers. Well, I love, you know, I really love I study on vaudeville and music hall theater and these early styles of entertainment that depended a lot on physical humor. MTV and the videos that we see, to the entertainers that we see today, are generally, I don't want to criticize anyone, but it's just become a set of coded hip-hop gestures that are used again and again and again to try to project the idea of cool. But the entertainers of the past were wonderful because they never cared about being cool. All they wanted to do was entertain people, and to entertain people is really just to bust them out of the dreary cycle of work and pain and disappointment and bring them to that other place, that transcendental place where we're all children, we're all playing all the time, and we have no worries.
Well, do you write your comedy for your stage shows, or
I don't write it down. I just improvise it, and it's just the situations themselves that somehow lead me to this place where comedy comes from.
The New York Post has described you as having a comic mind. I can certainly see that. But you have such a glamorous image. How do you integrate your sense of humor with the glamour, or is it in contrast to the glamour?
You know, the thing is, I can't see myself when I'm on stage. I can't see the glamour. I put it together to some extent. It's purely a way of compensating for my feeling that I'm really a very plain girl. I mean, that's
really
a funny thing about being a woman. People call you a woman artist or a woman musician. But when you're alone, you can't see that you're a woman. I mean, you don't really realize you're a woman until you get your period or until, you know, you walk out on the street and guys start looking at you and judging you purely in terms of the size of your secondary sex characteristics.
Well, I tell you this all the time. I tell my guests all the time. Women Are Not Funny is a mother-friendly show. That means we watch our language, but we don't have to go that far into euphemism. When Phoebe is talking about secondary sex characteristics, she means breasts. Phoebe, it's okay. We can talk about breasts on Women Are Not Funny.
That's the only time that I realize that I'm a woman. When I'm alone, I'm not really a woman. I'm an artist. I don't see myself. I'm still that little kid at the bus stop. I'm still that skinny little kid.
But on stage, your clothing on stage, from what I can tell, it's almost iconic clothing. You have every element associated with glamour represented, you know,
right.
Sequins.
Well, I study show business. You know, I study show business, and it's like that fabulous TV show you did with the paper dolls. I study on the great movie stars, and then ideas come to me, and they must be combinations of everything that I've seen. I sew my own costumes. That's in sharp contrast to a lot of the kids that we see now in show business. They, you know, go and shop at the great fashion shows, and the record companies sit around in teams, and they discuss what can be worn to get people talking about the star. But I have always sewn. I make my own clothes. I go into the fabric store.
Phoebe, stop for just a moment. That's amazing. That's amazing. You make your own stage costumes?
Oh, you didn't know that?
I did not know that.
I always have. My mother sewed beautifully. And she said, if you want to have nice clothes, you better learn to sew. And I don't sew the way she does. She is a master. I never have the time, because it's a secondary art form for me. I'll wait till the last minute, and then I'll be up all night sewing the sequins and the rhinestones, which are very difficult to sew. In fact, many people won't even sew them because they break the machine. You have to do it by hand. So I'll walk through there. Of course, I live in New York City. There are some gorgeous fabric stores. And I walk through the fabric store, and I say to God, I just kind of pray, and I say, show me to that magical fabric, you know. And then it leaps out at me. It always does. It's always something with a, you know, when you look at these shining costumes that people like Liberace wear, it's really almost, it gives a spiritual glow to the performer, spiritual glow, because going to see a show is a little bit like going to church in many, many ways if it's a good performer. So I just look for the, you know, that fabric, and I see it, and then I bring it home, and I drape it on myself, and, you know, I get inspired, I get the idea, and I just go with the idea. I learned that from my mother. My mother was very wise about following inspiration, following the suggestions of God.
Well, you know, that's great, and it makes me wonder if it's not related to the fact that you seem like you're fearless on stage.
It's not me. I have to say this. It's not me on stage. It is me. But it's some better version of me. it's as if I tap into one of those worlds in which I'm a little stronger and a little bigger and a little better than I really am. Then I come off stage and I'm just that skinny little kid again.
It's something I can really relate to because, as I think you know, I'm a keynote speaker, and I love being on stage. I feel beautiful when I'm on stage.
Okay.
And I think, you know, I think part of it is because you have so many, all eyes are on you, right? So I think that's part of it, too. But you're right. Then you have to walk off the stage. And some of us still want the attention.
Let's listen to the amazing Phoebe Legere sing Amazing.
I never dreamed that love would find me as I lay working on my tan. But we all know love runs the show, and it has since the universe began. I never dreamed we'd talk so softly and shyly hold each other's hand. I never dreamed the moon would rise above the trees while the waves kissed the golden sand.
And you're listening to Women Are Not Funny Radio on Jackalope 105 FM.
You're really in sync with the whole idea of branding. I mean, you really got that from the very beginning. My Twitter personality is just like me. You know, I'm blogging about politics and music and art and fashion and just, you know, social commentary. But you are very much on message all the time.
Well, it's so funny because many of our listeners, of course, are not Twitter fans or Twitter participants at all. So they're not necessarily going to know what we're talking about. But this is a social media platform where Phoebe and I met, and we meet many people that are very accomplished and high achievers. That's the thing that I love about Twitter, Phoebe, is you never know who you're going to meet there. And the people who are drawn to that particular social media platform tend to be very high achievers and very skilled at communications. And everyone has their own style, you're right. But speaking of hair, and my doll avatar has lovely hair, and I must say it's actually a photograph of me in a cranky mood. But, you know, Phoebe, your hair is one of your trademarks, and it is glorious. It's thick and icy blonde, and, you know, I just have to ask, do you grow your own?
You mean do I have extensions?
I don't know. It's just beautiful. I'm going, how does that happen?
Thank you. It is real, and it's funny. Since these rich people started getting extensions, everybody seems to ask that. They don't say you have beautiful hair. They say, oh, are those extensions? And no, it's my own hair. I would never spend money on extensions. I don't spend money on anything. I'm the cheapest person in the world, not because I want to be, but because I'm an artist. And if you're an artist, you have to be very, very thrifty. So I don't have plastic surgery. I don't have extensions. I don't have, you know, blue contact lenses. I don't have any of that. I just do it the way it came out of the box. And my secret for growing hair, if people want to know, is that I do nothing to it. I never put chemicals on it. I never put heat on it. I never let anybody tease it. I know that people are starting to tease their hair again. And your hair will break. Will lose half its strength if you tease it regularly and put on alcohol-based hairspray. So if you want to grow your hair, the secret is, just like everything else in life, really, do nothing. Don't try so hard. Just let it be what it is, because the way that God makes hair grow out of a woman's head, this is one of the, I mean, God got a lot of stuff right, but this is one of the things he really does well, is hair.
Well, I just hope God's paying attention and keeps keeps up that practice. So, you know, you bring up an important point. It is so sad to me that artists, the very ones who bring richness and beauty to our culture, quite frequently have to live so frugally because they're paid so poorly. You're the ones who make our lives so fun and rich and happy, and yet you are the last ones to be well compensated for that.
I'm just so lucky and blessed that I'm able to make a living as a musician, and that's only because I play by ear and I have an extraordinary memory, so I know thousands of songs, and this is how I've been able to maintain myself and fund some of my more interesting artistic projects. I know that if I had to work in an office chained to a computer 8 hours a day, I know that I could not maintain my creativity at the level that I do. I'm very, very, very lucky.
Well, that is a great attitude, but I just wonder how it feels. I can't imagine how it feels to have had such incredible success, because you have. You've done some amazing things, and you're still not a household name, despite the fact that you've done all of these amazing things.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, Kay, first of all, you're so sweet. You're so darling and so generous. You know, a household name is a very interesting thing. People think of this as a measure of success. But really, when you think of it, a household name is nothing more than something you can blow your nose on every day and not even think about and throw away. That's Kleenex, of course. One of the most famous generic brands, which became a household name.
Well, Well, you're certainly not being ignored. And you, when you are on stage, one of the things that we have not revealed, and of course we're going to be playing some of your beautiful music, but when you're on stage, your stage show demonstrates that you have a 4.5-octave range, that you love almost every genre of music, and you're accomplished at them all. You play the piano, the accordion, the Native American flute, and a synthesizer on your stage shows. And, you know, it just sounds like a cavalcade.
Well, I do love music. I do love music. Music has been a real medicine for me. I can't imagine what would have happened to me in my life had I not had music. It's a natural antidepressant.
Well, tell me, you know, I know that currently you're performing regularly at a club, and you're there every month. Who's typically in your audience?
We have a lot of famous people. Robin Williams came to see me last week, a famous comedian. And Madonna comes, Rod Stewart comes, Lady Gaga has been there, and they always come incognito, but it's very hard for them to hide. Everybody comes to check me out and learn what they can.
Oh, that's... That is wonderful. Well, you know, I've read that your audience tends to be people who view you as a role model and fashionistas, nieces who view you as a role model. But I would think you'd have a lot of men in your audience as well.
I do have men, but I feel that my real audience, the real core of my audience, my demographic, if you will, are really smart women. Those are the people who like me. Smart, enlightened, good-hearted women of all ages seem to respond to my message, which is obviously a message of self-love.
Well, what could be a better audience than that? That's for sure.
It's the best audience.
Yeah, but, you know,
they're loyal. Men are very fickle as an audience.
Really?
That's
you find that so?
That's why pop stardom generally only lasts 2 years. I mean, you have to pay a lot of money for it to last 30 years or however long Madonna paid for it to last. But in general, it's about 2 years if you're lucky, just like an infatuation. A man will be infatuated for about 2 years, but a woman can love for her whole life. One man for a whole life.
There's some wisdom there, Phoebe. So do your audiences know and understand? Apparently your audiences are very smart. Do they understand how really, really, really smart you are?
I don't know how smart I am. I was thinking this morning, as I took my shower, I was thinking how lucky I've been to have really smart people in my life from the earliest age. I think that, and how they've inspired me. There were a lot of geniuses that God put in my path. Even when I was a child, my parents weren't that impressed with me. And, oh, what a blessing. I had a piano teacher there was a lady who played piano who lived right across the street. And as soon as I could walk, I started walking across the street to get near the music, and she taught me for 12 years without being paid. And all of my teachers have taught. No teacher has ever taken a penny from me. How lucky I am! So I'm not smart. I was just lucky enough to be around smart people, and I absorbed things from them.
Right. You're not smart, but you have a very impressive academic background. You're a graduate of Vassar.
I worked hard. I had to work hard.
Good. I'm glad you worked hard. I'm sure
you
learned
a lot.
I
guess I felt being a part Native American and French Canadian. My grandparents spoke French, and I felt like I never was really as smart as the other kids, and so I wanted to work really hard just to keep my head above water. Yeah. Yeah, academia is really hard. I don't even know if I approve of as much education as I got. I think maybe all you need to do is all you need is music and love and nature, and maybe we don't need so much information, but I got quite a bit.
Well, you did, and you studied composing at Juilliard.
Yes, I did. And I learned
and that's important, isn't it?
Hmm?
That's important. That's been instrumental in the success of so many of your projects and your ability to take so many on.
Great teachers, great teachers at Juilliard, absolutely. It did strengthen me. Music has become like an Olympic sport because there are so many people in it. It's so highly competitive. So it probably did give me some tools to give me an edge. I learned how to write for the orchestra and how to conduct the orchestra, and I'm very, very glad. That is something that has to be taught. It's true, but it doesn't make you a better musician. It just makes you a better competitor.
This is Kay Ballard, and you're listening to Women Are Not Funny Radio on Jackalope 105 FM.
The music has to be there. And I was pretty good from a very young age. I mean, when I started, by age five, I was rocking pretty hard.
So were you a feminist prior to Vassar, or did that...
It's a very interesting question. Nobody's ever asked that question. Certainly my feminism was developed at Vassar because I read a lot of feminist theory. And I was exposed to all those ideas and to other very charismatic, very brilliant feminists like Linda Nochlin, the great art theorist, there at Vassar. But, you know, from a very young age, I realized that people were treating me like a girl, and I noticed it particularly when I went through puberty, Kay. At about 14 or 15, I went from being one of the ugliest girls you ever saw in your life to I sort of learned how to do my hair in a way that would distract from my face, and I got kind of developed a shape, and I started to learn how to dress it up, and suddenly people were treating me in the strangest way. I mean, people respond so, they're just freaked out by anybody who really wants to harness the power of their femaleness. And at the same time, I wanted to be an intellectual. I always enjoyed reading, and, you know, I like to use my brain. And so I started to get the idea from that point, I wanted to be treated as an equal with men. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe from age 12, I started to get this idea. I'm as good as a boy. I got that idea. And later it came to fruition in a musical I wrote called Hello, Mrs. President, about the first black woman president of the United States. When I first wrote it, people said, "You're crazy. That's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. We're never going to have an African-American president." But my idea was that this would be great to have an African-American woman, you know, with a big sunshiny smile, somebody who sings her ass off, with a law degree, and, you know, somebody who could really bring the people together.
Well, apparently we did have, if only in your musical.
Yes, we did. And who knows, it's possible that life imitates art.
Well, I hope so, particularly when it comes into your art. And you're a visual artist as well.
Yes, I am. My parents
alongside. I mean,
my parents were both artists, and that's what they were encouraging. They didn't really get the music, but they thought, and everybody thought, that I was going to become famous as a painter. So it's very easy for me. I do it every day. The music I had to fight for a little bit, but the art comes very easily, very naturally to me.
So you're saying at Vassar they considered your art, that's where you started getting some attention for your visual art?
Yes. I always get a lot of attention for it. Because when your parents do something and you're raised from an early age doing it, you have so much confidence in it. And you can play, you know, you can put aside all the technique and just go nuts. And that's what I do. I really, really enjoy it. Look, I'm really smiling now. I love to talk about my visuals.
Well, here's what I want to try to understand, because apparently, so there you were at Vassar, and you were into the music, and your art was getting some recognition, but it was there, was it there, where you came up with this concept of a 360-degree approach to art?
Yes. I developed this thing called Total Art Synthesis. I wanted to combine all the art forms into one master art form. Sort of like a universal field theory, what they're trying to do with string theory now in physics. I wanted to put music and painting and movement and text and science and everything together in this master art form. And I thought that probably the best way to do it was performance art. So I got my degree in performance art, actually. I wrote my thesis on it and was extremely interested in it and did some very, very interesting, to me, performances. But then performance art got co-opted a little bit into some form of, I don't know, burlesque here in New York City. This thing happened to performance art. It just turned into something a little gross, which is, you know, where modern art has been going for the past few years. You know, it's, I love art because I love things that are beautiful. But maybe your listeners who don't live in New York can't follow this, but there's a lot of modern art that's ugly. It's like gross. And so your capacity to appreciate these gross things is now what makes you some kind of a connoisseur. And I have very little tolerance for ugly things, brutal things, violent things. I just don't like those things. I like beautiful things. So I'm a little old-fashioned that way, both in my music and my art. I'm a little conservative that way.
Darling, you are old-fashioned. I have to tell you, I'm an art collector, and I don't like gross. I collect outsider art, and I like expressionism, and we all define beauty differently, that's for sure.
Outsider art, oh, this fantastic. Outsider art tends to be, to have great beauty.
I agree.
I'm not talking about outsider visionary art. I'm talking about, like, somebody vomiting in the corner of an art gallery and saying, you know, I'm the greatest artist.
Yeah,
that happens in New York. I mean, I don't think anybody's done that, but actually I should do that. Then I would be a household name.
Well, the fact of the matter is it just goes to what you were saying. Fame is transitory, and it takes an awful lot and just, you know, kind of excessive behavior to get the kind of attention that you need. I mean, we run into that certainly in Women Are Not Funny Radio. We want listeners, and we're alongside thousands and thousands of other radio shows. So here's something that you and I really have in common. We love younger men. You know, it is rumored that I would actually date a fetus. And you have someone in your show, a 15-year-old violinist, who you say, and I think it's clever, you find him inspiring.
Well, you know, I do love all men. I do love all men. I mean, it took me a long time to realize that men are people, too. They are. And even if they say stupid stuff that makes you cringe, you know, it's not their fault. You know, men are just big, muscular, dumb women. You know, they're just women in another form.
Oh, my. I love Phoebe Legere, but she took it a little too far. Men are big, dumb women? Oh, no, Phoebe. No, no. Men may be big. They may be dumb. They may be smart. Whatever they are, they're not women. And we're glad of that. We're so glad of that.
I like men a lot. I really do. And younger men,
do you have a younger lover, Kay?
You know what? I cannot discuss that now because this interview is about you. This is about you, Phoebe.
boy's got a heart of grease. He's the Romeo of Mulberry Street. He's got a little cannoli, it's like a dream. Heart of crunchy and full of cream. If you see Tony, take my advice. Hold on to your heart, he's awfully nice. Here we go round the mulberry bush. Fast a pussycat, whoosh, whoosh. Ooh, a strange new twist. A mean right hook and a limp wrist. Hey, Tony, listen to me. I need a hot delivery. I need a something good to satisfy me. I need a large with pepperoni.
Hot Sicilian pizza boy. Hot Sicilian pizza boy.
I need a tomato. I need a joint. I need a hot Sicilian pizza boy.
Hot Sicilian pizza boy. Hot Sicilian pizza boy.
I need a tomato. I need a joint. I need a hot Sicilian pizza boy.
Send your folks the bill. Here we go round the mulberry bush. Faster, pussycat, push, push.
Ooh, take my advice. Hey, Tony, listen to me. I need a hot delivery. I need something good to satisfy me. I need a large with pepperoni.
Hot Sicilian pizza boy. Hot Sicilian pizza boy.
I need a tomato. I need a joint. I need a hot Sicilian pizza boy.
Hot Sicilian pizza boy. Hot Sicilian pizza boy.
I need a tomato. I need a joint. I need a hot Sicilian pizza boy. Come in. Woo!
You have this new CD, and I think it's number 13. You have so many. You have a very 13? Prolific career as a recording artist. Is your new CD number 13? You don't even know, do you?
A little bit. Let's say 12.
12. Okay. And it is called. I want to hear you say it. It has kind of a luxurious name.
It's called The Ooh La La Cocktail. And I spell cock with a C-O-Q because it's the feminine of cock.
Fabulous. And it has a lot of tracks, including several that you've written yourself.
Yes. I included a few cover songs because it's a way of seducing listeners into listening to my own music, is to open always with a couple of familiar songs. So I have a couple of covers. I have Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered, a very sexy song by Rodgers and Hart.
Right, I know that one well.
And I have many songs in French. I have Just One of Those Things by Cole Porter, sung in French. And it doesn't sound like dance music. It doesn't sound like alternative rock. But I think it sounds very elegant.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's quite seductive. And the thing is, I don't speak French at all, and it doesn't Camper sings for me at all, do not understand the lyrics. I mean, your vocals are such a beautiful part of the music. They have meaning beyond the meaning of the words.
Thank you. Well, the interesting thing about this CD is that I wanted to make a CD that didn't come out of the computer. People don't really realize how much the music that they hear when they go into a store, when they turn on their computer, they don't realize how much of the music that they are listening to and dancing to actually has a very small human component, that most of it is done by computers. It is actually computer music. you think you're listening to a human voice, but in fact, generally you're listening to a human voice that's being trailed by a computer sample in order to beef up the voice. Then they go to hear these people live, and they say, wow, that doesn't sound like the person on the record. Of course, they try as hard as they can to make these people sound good in live performance, because there are so many millions of dollars at stake. And so they use the same machines, pitch correctors, that drive the voice into a perfect pitch. And what you might say, well, what's wrong with that? Isn't perfection good? And actually, no. Perfection is not good for human beings. Perfection might be good in heaven, but we shouldn't allow music, which is our healing medicine, our collective healing medicine, to be taken over by machines any more than we should allow machines to make the big decisions in our lives. We cannot trust machines. Machines do not have souls. So I wanted to make a CD that was completely human-made, handmade. I went into Tony Bennett's son's studio, and I sang into Tony's favorite microphone while playing the piano simultaneously. And I said, one, two, three, four. And I hired the best musicians in town, and they played. And what you hear is exactly what happened that afternoon. No overdubs, no retakes, no inserts, no pitch correction. It's totally the opposite of the music that is being made by the household names.
Well, it's very cool, and our listeners will find links on the show notes where they can go directly to an order page for it. It seems like to me your online presence, which is somewhat prolific, is really really aimed at making friends rather than promoting yourself.
Oh, bless your heart. It is true. Since 1995, you know, I come from the East Village, as everybody may, I hope, know. The East Village is where the artists live in New York City. And I was lucky enough to be part of a great renaissance that happened down here in the East Village. I like to think that I was part of this extraordinary cultural phenomenon that happened in the late 80s and early 90s, where artists and musicians came together. And a renaissance is when things just start to blossom. It's like, it's sort of like a cultural springtime where everybody's young, and people aren't out to make money, they're not out to get famous, they're not out to be better than anybody else, they're just out to express themselves and have fun. And I was part of this. It's a very, very exciting time to have in my history. And so then it started to dry up for many reasons. In fact, the publicity that we got, and I was part of it, made all of the real estate be worth so much money down here in the East Village. And also the terrible disease, AIDS, and people were really, all the big talented gay guys were dying from AIDS at that time. So our base, our talent base got decimated, and the real estate became very expensive. And for a number of reasons, the Renaissance stopped happening. And at that, just at that moment, I got my first computer. I think it was 1994. And there were several different social sites at that time. There was a thing called mp3.com. There were some places where I could get my music out, and I could talk to people, and I could be free. It was kind of like an online bohemia. It was exactly as it was drying up in real life. I began to find friends on the globe, on a global level, people in California, people in Sweden, people in Australia, people who really got what I was doing and wanted to be friends with me. And when I was a little girl, you know, I always had a fantasy. I had a strange fantasy of being friends with people all over the world. And my idea at that time was that they would send me postcards. And I don't know, I just liked that idea of being friends with people and everybody kind of getting together collectively and making something together. So, yes, it's true. I probably should be more savvy and more cunning about promoting things and being businesslike. Unfortunately, Twitter has been taken over very much by people who are really good at this, at marketing. But in those early days of Twitter, when I first met you, it was a very pure thing. And I think we were just, you know, a bunch of people with tremendous verbal excess. Who couldn't shut up? I think that was your term, couldn't shut up. You know, we just love to talk. We love to be friends. Yeah, that's me.
Phoebe, our conversation has definitely been a jam. Whether it's been relaxing or not, I can't really say, but I adore you, and thank you so much for coming by today.
Thank you, Kay.
If you happen to be in New York City the third week of the month, you're in luck because you can catch Phoebe Legere performing live once a month, third week of the month. Check out her website.
As I lay working on my tan, but we all know love runs the show, and it has since the universe began. I never dreamed we'd talk so softly and shyly hold each other's hand. I never dreamed the moon would rise above the trees while the waves kiss the golden sand.
Amazing love has come to me. But lately, baby, you've been starring in my dreams. When we're together, it's so easy to fly. And now I've placed you far above me. Tell all your other loves goodbye. And baby, I will stay here by your side, and I will tell you the simple reason why.
Amazing love has come to me, has come to me. Amazing love, suddenly, oh, now I see amazing love.
You're wonderful, you're beautiful, you're wild, you're funny, you're fast, and I never.
You have been listening to Women Are Not Funny Radio, a New Media International production. On behalf of Kay Ballard, her fabulous guest, and the secretly hilarious Women Are Not Funny team, thanks for being here. This is Aaron James Lee, one of the producers of the show, putting up with Kay Ballard for yet another week, and also reminding you that you can listen to our replays anytime you please by going to our website at womenarenotfunny.com. And don't forget to subscribe via iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. Are you still here? One more thing. Don't forget to join us again next week for another episode of Women Are Not Funny Radio.